From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at Samford University's Wright Center in Birmingham, Alabama, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back in Birmingham. Later on in the show, we are going to be joined by the leader of the legendary Blind Boys of Alabama, the gospel singer Jimmy Carter. But first, pollsters have been mystified this election by white middle-aged men. They seem divided right down the middle between John McCain and Barack Obama. Some can't even decide between the two of them, which at least politically is like admiring both the Hatfields and the McCoys. It was a mystery that was finally solved by a blogger named John Stotter, who blurted out, quote, "I wish they could run together. They'd be like one of those old 1970s cop shows," unquote. He's right, of course. Can you imagine it? McCain, the old-timer, waiting to collect his pension when suddenly he's given a new partner, the upstart Obama. Yeah, he's got moxie and talent, but he's untested, a wild card. You could even add, Hillary Clinton. You get the Mod Squad, the old TV show. The tagline really was, one's white, one's black, one's blonde. There you go.
There you go.
Add a few cameos by Mike Barney Fife Huckabee, we'd never have to watch TV again.
Yeah.
Well, it's a pipe dream. And until it happens, we're going to have to wring what entertainment we can from what actually happened this week. Let's get started. Give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Diane.
Hey.
From Pacific Grove, California.
Well, welcome, Diane. Where's Pacific Grove?
It's on the Monterey Peninsula. You were
Lamar
a couple of years ago.
I remember, yeah, right there.
I was
there.
In the front row.
Oh, really? Oh, I remember you.
Yeah.
Diane, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and the author most recently of Moving the Chains, Tom Brady and the Pursuit of Everything, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, how are you?
Next, say hello to a comedian who'll be appearing at the Dennis Flyer Theater in Rochester, New Jersey, on Saturday, March 8th, Miss Paula Poundstone.
Paula Poundstone, I really love you.
Well, thank you.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author, most recently, of Long Time Leaving, Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Roy.
Hi, Diane.
Welcome to the show, Diane. You're going to play Who's Carol this time. Carol Castle, right now, will read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carol's voice, on your home answering machine. Here's your first quote.
I seem to get the first question all the time, and I don't mind. You know, I'd be happy to field them, but I do find it curious. Maybe we should ask Barack if he's comfortable and needs another pillow.
That was somebody at a debate in Cleveland this week, finally losing her patience a little with the media. Who's tired of always having to go first?
That would be Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Yes, very good. In their 20th and most likely final debate on Tuesday night, Senator Clinton tried a new tactic against her rival Barack Obama, whining. Didn't work. Nothing else has either, though. Earlier in the week, for example, somebody from her campaign, allegedly, leaked a photo of Obama wearing traditional Somali dress to the Drudge Report. But all that did was to cause sales of turbans to go through the roof. Her earlier charges of plagiarism got laughed at. Her attempts to mock his soaring rhetoric just underscored how mundane her own speeches can be. And her warnings that Obama would just use America for fun and then run off with a more attractive younger country went unheard. Then finally, later in the debate, she got Obama to concede that denouncing the support of Louis Farrakhan wasn't enough. He had to reject him. Obama said, okay, if it makes you happy, I will denounce and reject him. And Hillary pumped her fist and went, yes, yes, put it on the board. And then she looked over, and moderator Brian Williams was showing Obama his brand new turban. do you think, guys, that there's anything that Hillary could do at this point to reverse the trends here?
Yes.
What?
She can win in Texas.
There you are.
Just do that.
Hey, that was real punditry there. Jeez, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Whoa. Holy God.
I don't think it's over. I think she's a terrific candidate. I don't think it's up to us to decide who's winning.
You have it.
Yeah, you do.
I have to say, it really shouldn't be up to us specifically, because if it was up to us, the general election would be Ron Paul versus Mike Gravel, and that... as good as it would be for us, I don't know if the country needs that.
Boy, that Ron Paul can hang a poster, can he? Oh, my heavens! I never saw so many posters for anybody in my life. I don't know if he did television ads, I don't know, but his poster-hanging campaign was unbelievable. The Easter Bunny didn't put so many things in different places.
Diane, here is your next quote.
No, I think he is a narcissistic pest. I wish he would drive off in a Chevy Corvair into the sunset. He is a pest like the cicada that comes around every so many years to annoy us.
That was one of the answers in a poll in the D.C. paper, The Washington Express, in which 90% of respondents answered no when asked if they take Hu's newly renewed presidential candidacy seriously.
The Green Party.
The Green Party. Well, he was the Green Party.
Yes. Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader. Very good.
Yes. Ralph Nader.
The man who once strived to save Americans from the danger of fun cars now rises once again to respond to another pressing need, a feeling among Americans that voting for Ron Paul isn't throwing their vote away enough. Nader is widely blamed, loathed, hated, and resented by Democrats because they think the votes he got in Florida in 2000 effectively handed the presidency to George Bush. He denies that. He says that Democrats and Republicans are the same anyway, and that anybody who says otherwise is just dumb. In a variation on the old Barry Goldwater presidential motto, in your heart, you know he's right, Nader is going with, in his heart, he knows you're wrong. All right, very good, Diane. Here is your last quote. Okay.
I am lapidary, but not heuristic when I use big words.
That was a famous conservative talking about his habit of using a rather expansive vocabulary. He died this week at the age of 82. Who?
William Buckley.
Exactly right. William F. Buckley. He was
well done.
Yes. He was born wealthy. He lived exactly as he pleased and spent his life arguing, in essence, that everybody should have the freedom to do the same. Even if they didn't have a yacht, perhaps they could enjoy their God-given freedom on some sort of dinghy. The author and founder of the National Review was not always right. He later apologized, for example, for supporting segregation, but he was always smart and funny, and he inspired legions of writers and politicians in his wake. He was also a man who really knew how to enjoy life. Among the many stories told about him, one that we came across this week told by his biographer. In the late 60s, apparently, Mr. Buckley became quite curious as to what all these hippie kids were getting all excited about. So he acquired some marijuana from his chauffeur and with his friend got on his yacht to sail beyond territorial waters, who would break no law. And they sat down to smoke the pot and watch a dirty movie.
Ooh.
But the problem was that, true to his station, he also imbibed his traditional afternoon cocktails beforehand. So they both fell asleep during the whole thing.
Therefore, he did inhale his cocktail. Probably.
He did, probably, if not anything else. Yeah. Carl, how did Diane do in our quiz?
Diane had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Diane, I'll be doing the message on her home answering machine.
All right.
Well done. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, the Associated Press did some research, and they found that it's been exactly 2 years since Clarence Thomas has done something in his capacity as a Supreme Court justice. What?
Spin plates on long sticks, because he's really good at that.
What?
You know what Hollywood Palace used to do?
No.
That's one of his things, yeah. He also does bird imitations, and he does a ventriloquist act. He sits on Scalia's knee. It's really cool. actually, that's close to the truth. Because it has been 2 years since he said anything during the oral arguments of the United States Supreme Court.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
See, he has not spoken in 2 years. That, as Charlie said, just the oral arguments. We assume back in chambers, he's a regular chatty Cathy. Mm-hmm. Unlike the other Supreme Court justices, who constantly question and interrupt the lawyers arguing before them, Justice Thomas, according to the AP's calculations, has not said a single word in more than 144 cases that have come before the High Court in the last 2 years. When asked about this silence, he told the Federalist Society, quote, "One thing I've demonstrated often in 16 years is you can do this job without asking a single question." Supreme Court records show, though, that on two occasions this year, Justice Thomas blinked. And one time, he had a little thumb wrestling match with Justice Breyer. And once, he was seen making a little origami crane out of the Fourth Amendment.
Do we know whether this is unusual? I mean, was, you know, did John Marshall go 2 years without saying anything? Or, you know, Brennan or any of those guys?
Yeah, but they had died, so...
Now they have, yes.
Yeah, I mean...
I know, it's been a long time since John Marshall said anything.
That's
but...
true.
But we have Clarence Thomas on YouTube not asking anything. There's this great 400-hour YouTube clip where he's...
It's like one of those cameras at the intersection. It just never changes. Yeah. Occasionally it starts to snow around him. And... Mm-hmm.
Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Who's this?
This is Crystal Connor calling from Bristol, Tennessee.
Hey, Crystal. Welcome to the show. Tell me, what do you do there in Bristol?
I work for the United States Postal Service. I'm a mail carrier.
You are?
Oh.
Yes, I am.
You sound far too young and cheerful to be my traditional image of a postal carrier.
I hate that a lot.
Do you really?
Yes.
They're going to wear that out of you, basically, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Do you read the postcards?
No, I try not to.
Yeah, I understand. Well, Crystal, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Crystal's topic?
No Pulitzer for you.
The news media has taken their share of lumps lately, the New York Times getting compared to the National Enquirer, the weekly apologies from MSNBC. It's hard out there for a journalist. Well, this week we read a story that proved the downward spiral is continuing. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of lousy journalism. Choose the true one. You'll get Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play, Crystal?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's hear first from Charlie Pierce.
Well, Peter, as you know, I only read Maxim for the record reviews. Anyway, the Lad Mag came a cropper this week when it was revealed that a writer had reviewed War Paint, the new album by the Black Crowes, without having heard the CD. Maxim editorial director James Kaminsky said, "I will be the last person to mince words. This is a mistake." But Black Crowes manager Peter Angelus was not mollified. Maxim, he said, was engaged in, quote, self-serving damage control. The review said that the Black Crowes sounded pretty much like they always sounded, quote, boozy, competent, and totally in debt to the Stones, the Allmans, and the Faces. Odds are that that was pretty accurate. But what's next? Photoshopping Eliza Dushku?
All right. From Maxim magazine reviewing a CD negatively without even having heard it, your next story of journalism that had Edward R. Murrow during 360s in his grave comes from Paula Poundstone.
A scathing review of a recent Fiddler on the Roof production in the Burbank Mirror has outraged many in the community, including director Miriam Billington. "It was an elementary school play," she said. "This guy was reviewing it as though it was Broadway bound. Of course the sets looked cardboard. They were cardboard. Miss Taslimi's class made them, with extra help from Joey's mom." 10-year-old Franco Rodriguez, who played the leading role, was dismayed. "He hurt my feelings when he said that with a voice like Tevye's, it's a miracle his mule didn't go deaf as well as lame. I should have done soccer."
A terrible negative review of an elementary school play. Your last story of less than stellar journalistic endeavors comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
When Eula Grimes inherited the Elkston, Ohio Tribune-Star on the death of her father last June, readers noticed a change in tone. For example, Eula let off a front-page obituary of her dad with the revelation, since called into question, that she had been abducted as a child from a circus in which her real mother performed as a bareback rider. Eula went on to declare, that going forward, the paper's reporting would be, quote, more passionate. Her efforts to make good on that pledge soon caused several staffers to resign, citing ethical concerns. Circulation increased slightly thanks to a cult following that formed around Eula's weekly column, The Emotional Truth, in which she often reflected upon how her life would have been different if she had been a circus star. Advertisers, however, were unimpressed, and last week Eula announced that the paper would cease publication. The photograph, most likely photoshopped, above Eula's last column showed her wearing a bespangled dress and standing on a great white horse.
All right, Crystal.
Wow, that was real tough.
It is. Here are your choices. Let me review them for you. From Charlie Pierce, a CD reviewer in Music Reviewer in Maxim magazine, giving a negative review to an album he had never heard. From Paula Poundstone, a negative review given to an elementary school play. And from Roy Blunt, Jr., the new editor of the Elston, Ohio Tribune Star, devoting the paper to her own emotional truths as a former, she says, circus child. Which of these is the real story of journalistic malpractice?
I'm going to go with answer number A.
A, the first one?
Yes.
That would be Charlie's about the music critic. Is that your choice?
Yes.
All right. Well, we actually spoke to an expert in this form of journalism to bring you the right answer.
It's a thankless task having to listen to the new Britney Spears or the new Black Crowes, but, you know, you are supposed to listen to it at least once to verify that opinion. And, I mean, the whole point of getting paid to do a review is that you listen to the Black Crowes so everybody else doesn't have to.
That was our friend Jim DeRogatis, pop music critic for the Chicago Sun-Times and co-host of Sound Opinions, explaining why the reviewer at Maxim should have listened to the Black Crowes albums at least once before writing about it. You are, of course, correct. Congratulations, Charlie did have the real story. You have won our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Well, that's awesome.
Isn't it, though?
Thank you, Crystal from Bristol.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask distinguished people to answer silly questions. It's called Not My Job. Our guest today, one of the living legends of gospel music. Jimmy Carter was a young man attending a school for the blind in Talladega, Alabama, in 1939 when he formed a gospel group with some other students. Since then, the Blind Boys of Alabama have sung all over the world. They've won multiple Grammy Awards. They've appeared on Broadway and in film. They continue to record. Their most recent recording, Down in New Orleans, came out last month. Jimmy Carter, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So Jimmy, can you start by just telling us the story that I referred to how you guys got started?
Well, the Blind Boys of Alabama met at the Talladega Institute for Deaf and Blind. This school was funded by the state of Alabama, and all of the blind children that wanted to get an education came to that school. So that's how we met. We started singing together in 1939. And we hit the road on June the 10th, 1944. We started out as the Happy Land Jubilee Singers. The Blind Boys, that name came years later. That's another story entirely.
Well, how did that happen?
Well, I don't have time to tell it.
Oh, we got all the time you need.
Well, that was another group of blind people called the Jackson Harmoniers out of Jackson, Mississippi. Aha! And they started out about the same time the Blind Boys of Alabama did. And this guy, this promoter of gospel music in Newark, New Jersey, thought up this gimmick. He said, I'm going to bring the Blind Boys of Alabama and the Blind Boys of Mississippi to Newark, New Jersey, in a battle of music. That's how the Blind Boys got their name.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy Newark? Because I'm thinking that you'd have to be blind to do so. And I'm from New Jersey. I get to say that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, you've been singing gospel music then for, 54, 55 years on the road professionally.
Maybe.
Yeah? Were you ever tempted in all those years to dip into other forms of music, to try your hands? So many came and went while you were doing it.
Yeah, well, you know, Sam Cooke did, and we were all the same. The same time he got his offer, the Blind Boys had the offer too, but we turned it down.
Really?
Yeah.
So when they, because Sam Cooke also, like many of the great R&B and pop singers, started as a gospel singer.
Of course. Yeah.
And so you got the same kind of offer that Sam Cooke got? Sing
the same day.
Right. The same day.
The same day.
And you turned it down.
Turned it down.
Why?
We wanted to sing gospel music. We were a dedicated gospel group, and we promised the Lord that we would never deviate from that. So we are still here. And we're going to stay here until he says that's enough.
We understand, we are told that you have that one of your roles with the group is and has always been, you're the guy who likes to go out in the audience and get everybody excited. Is that true?
That's correct.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You still do that?
Still do it.
Yeah. How do you do that? You just walk out there and...
Well, no, I have a guy that takes me out.
Yeah.
I give him a cue. He has a cue.
Yeah.
And when I give him the cue, we walk out.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And what do you do when you get out there into the big halls? You play?
Oh, I just get out there and just do my thing.
Jimmy, have you ever had kind of a dead crowd that didn't respond even when you're trying to get them going?
Well, you know, when I walk out, I tell them this. I say, now, the Blind Boys do not like a conservative crowd.
You like them to give it up.
Mm-hmm. We like a noisy crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 99 won't do.
99 won't do. Got to be 100.
There you go.
Let me ask you this. You've been, one of the things that's happened last decade or so, maybe even longer, you guys have really been embraced by mainstream music. You've sung with a lot of musicians, have invited you to sing with them on their records and concerts. You've been put in movies on the Broadway stage. How's that been for you? Because you've labored for so long in the gospel world, now you're...
Well, you know, I always say, this is my philosophy, better late than never.
There you go. You even sang the theme song for the TV show The Wire.
The Wire, right. Mm-hmm. Down in the Hole. Yeah. Yeah. Good Tom Waits song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Have you met Mr. Waits?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I think he'd dig your version. I just got to ask you one last question. We've been doing this with all the musicians that have been coming in the show in the last year or so. And this is interesting because this is the first time we've put it to a pure singer. What do you think, Jimmy Carter, is the sexiest musical instrument? So, for example, we asked that to Branford Marsalis. He thought it was the saxophone. Weird Al Yankovic thought it was the accordion. Surprise. So, you who don't play an instrument, per se, other than your own voice, what do you think is the sexiest instrument?
My voice.
There you go.
I think we've got a band now.
I think so.
Put all those guys together.
Well, Jimmy Carter, we are so thrilled to have you with us here. We have asked you here to play a game with us, and we are calling it...
You Don't Even Like Peanuts.
We're guessing that you have spent a fair bit of time since the 1970s either apologizing to audiences or reassuring them, more likely, that they weren't about to be serenaded by the 39th President of the United States. So we're going to see how much you know, sir, about the other Jimmy Carter. Get two out of these three questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Carl, who is the more fun Jimmy Carter playing for?
Well, Jimmy is playing for Barry Nichols of Anniston, Alabama.
All right. Ready to do this?
Yeah.
Have you met Jimmy Carter, the President Carter?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, nice man?
Nice fellow, yeah.
Okay.
How's he sing?
Well, I tried to get him to sing, but he wouldn't do it.
No. All right, Jimmy, here we go. Jimmy Carter entered the race as only a one-term ex-governor of Georgia. What did his mother, known as Miss Lillian, say when he told her he was running for president? Did she say, A, quote, that's nice, son, and I'll be your empress? Did she say, B, quote, did Billy put you up to this? Or did she say, quote, president of what?
I'm going to take C.
You're going to take C. President of what?
Yeah.
Very good, sir. Yes. Very good. Now, Jimmy Carter gets criticized a lot for his various failures as president, stagflation, the Iran hostage crisis. But he did accomplish at least one inarguably good thing. What was it? Was it A, he made home brewing of beer legal throughout the land? B, he allowed children in the White House lawn Easter egg roll to use spoons rather than their noses? Or C, via an executive order, he finally allowed cabinet members to remove their ties at work?
Okay. I don't think it could be two C's in a row, so.
Now, that's exactly how I took my SATs, so it makes sense.
Yeah. By the way, it's not a successful method of doing your SATs.
I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B. He allowed children in the White House long Easter egg roll to use spoons rather than their noses. That your choice?
That's my choice.
I'm afraid not now. It was actually home brewing.
Really?
Home brewing. In 1979, President Jimmy Carter signed a law easing federal restrictions on brewing your own beer.
Really?
However, yes, this is true. It was illegal according to federal law. However, some states kept their own restrictions on it, including, I am very sorry to say, Alabama.
Oh.
Well, this is very exciting, Jimmy, because if you get this last question right, you'll win it all. So you have one right with one to go. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here's your last question. Carter famously tried to make the White House seem more relaxed than it had been under his predecessor, Richard Nixon. Not a relaxed man. In fact, the White House got so relaxed, what once happened? Was it A, presidential guest Willie Nelson went up to the roof of the White House and smoked a joint? B, President Carter once received his daily intelligence briefing in the Oval Office while wearing his bathrobe and Mr. Peanut slippers? Or C, the red hotline phone from the Soviet Union went unanswered for 4 minutes because the president and his aides were playing trash can basketball?
I'm going to say B again.
You're going to go for B. President Carter once received his intelligence briefing in the Oval Office wearing a bathrobe and Mr. Peanut slippers.
Yeah.
And he'd walk around and Mr. Peanut would sort of flop and look like he was walking.
Yeah.
You think that's the answer?
Yeah.
It was A. It was Willie Nelson.
Oh.
Willie Nelson. He played a concert at the White House. And then he says he went up to the roof to smoke a, quote, Austin blunt.
Well, I know he's capable of it.
Yeah, I was about to say. I'm surprised because I bet you've met Willie Nelson in your travels, have you not?
Yeah, I have.
And you'd probably...
I didn't smoke nothing with him, though.
No. I'm just saying you would. You're a godly man, but he, on the other hand, would and apparently did do that.
Yeah, well, he's my buddy.
Yes, I bet he is.
Yeah.
Carl, how did our Jimmy Carter do talking about the other one?
Well, Jimmy needed at least two correct answers to win for Barry Nichols, but this Jimmy had just one correct answer.
Sorry, Barry.
Well, you know.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, I think so. Jimmy Carter is one of the founding members of the Blind Boys of Alabama gospel group. They're on tour across the country in support of their new album, Down in New Orleans. For more information, you can go to blindboys.com. Jimmy Carter, thank you so much for joining us. Jimmy Carter, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, sir.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil.
In just a minute, Carl impersonates newsmakers for another listener contestant. If you would like that to be you, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, British veterinary experts say that among the domesticated animals, the parrot and other tropical birds are the ones that get the most what?
Get the most, TV time. They get more...
No. Airtime.
You seldom see a wren, for instance.
That's true. They get the most roles in animated films, I've noticed.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. They get to, they even form trios and dance. And
that's true.
Sing songs.
I'll give you a hint, ready?
Give me a hint.
I can't do the voice as well as Charlie, but... Molly want a Prozac?
They get more drugs?
They get, well, what do you need Prozac for?
They get more insecure and nervous and fidgety and anxious.
You said a lot of things, but not the right one.
Not the right. What do you depressed?
Yes,
depressed,
thank you.
Depressed.
Depressed.
Parrots get depressed.
Parrots apparently get depressed. Oh. If you ask your cockatoo, for example, if she wants a cracker, and she responds, "Oh, who cares?
Yeah.
Cracker, no cracker. It's all pointless."
Right.
Well, she's not alone. Yeah. Medical specialists at the UK's Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons say that tropical birds are now the most depressed out of all animal species, and are being put on liquid Prozac to cope with the problems in their caged lives. That's true. Veterinarians who treated the birds recommend Prozac because the birds are resistant to talk therapy.
Mm.
They just repeat every question, and the therapist ends up talking about their own mothers and getting all weepy.
And how does that make you feel?
Uh-huh. Oh, there's so many great parrot jokes that I can't tell. That's why they're... They're probably depressed because they feel misunderstood. Have you ever really sat down and asked? People don't ask parrots anything except...
Do they want crackers?
Do they want a cracker?
They have needs that go beyond crackers.
Yeah,
you get pretty bird, and they know they're not pretty.
They know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're ugly birds. And it just reinforces that. And you wind up seeing them at midnight in an armchair listening to Billie Holiday records and singing very lowly to themselves. It's sad.
Charlie, a Florida family was shocked to hear personalized death threats from whom?
In Florida, huh?
Yeah, these things always seem to happen in Florida, but it's got nothing to do with
it. Personalized death threats from the preacher.
No. I'll give you a hint. Sometimes, I guess, he just doesn't want to be tickled after all.
Oh, this is the sabotaged Elmo doll.
This is the Elmo doll.
Yes.
Oh, it's called the Elmo Knows Your Name doll. He knows more than that. The Bowman family of Lithia, Florida, became alarmed when they heard their talking Elmo doll say in his adorable sing-song voice, "Kill James!" James being the Bowman's young son. Mrs. Bowman said, quote, "I noticed exactly what it was saying, and my son was repeating exactly what it was saying. But if you think that sounds bad, this is the actual product description of Elmo Knows Your Name doll. Quote, Elmo knows your name, your family and friends' names, and your birth date. Elmo also knows your favorite foods, color, and animal, too. Turns out Elmo all this time was working for the Department of Homeland Security.
Wait a minute. I don't understand the Elmo knows. Is there really a doll like that?
Yeah, this is a doll, apparently, that you can teach it information about you, and it's a little digital chip inside it, and it will repeat the information.
Yeah, but what about the kill part?
That apparently was a malfunction.
Oh, well, yeah.
These things happen.
Huh, yeah, I know. Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
As far as I know, it didn't actually try to kill him. It was just an empty threat. So really, what's the problem?
Yeah, that child will never be the same, but...
He certainly won't watch Sesame Street anymore.
No.
He's watching Sesame Street like, that guy's still free?
Yeah, right.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first, it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows, usually at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can head to the NPR shop, where you can buy our Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Steve Sagonik from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hey, how are things in Virginia Beach?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. They sound exciting. What do you do there?
I'm an engineer.
Uh-huh. And what sort of things do you create as an engineer?
Oh, I do telecommunications, the network,
right,
for the Navy.
For the Navy. So this is the complicated stuff.
Some days.
Some days?
Some days better than others.
Do your friends constantly harass you to come over and fix their wireless networks?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the time.
I know. Steve, it's great to have you with us. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl, once again, we'll read three quotes from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain two of them. Ready to play?
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's your first quote.
We wouldn't go and play for Hitler.
But this is different. This is a little backwater country.
That's a member of the New York Philharmonic Orchestra talking to the Washington Post about making their debut where this week?
In North Korea.
Exactly right. Very good. The orchestra's conductor, Lauren Mazel, says the trip to the Stalinist country was a first step toward normal relations, just like the Philharmonic's famous trip to the Soviet Union in 1959. However, there are differences. The Soviet Union was a vast global adversary under the leadership of a shoe-pounding strongman, Nikita Khrushchev. North Korea, on the other hand, is a tiny Stalinist state under the leadership of a half-insane man in platform shoes who imposes the death penalty on anyone who insults his hair. Still, the trip's success has so excited the North Koreans, they have now asked, this is true, for Eric Clapton to come to Pyongyang, which either means the Philharmonic's concert was a big success, or that the North Koreans, like everyone else, ultimately would rather listen to rock and roll. All right, very good. Here's your next quote.
I'm not sure why it's going to take them 3 hours to learn how to press a button.
That's the owner of a coffee shop in Los Angeles. He was ridiculing a certain business which closed all its locations Tuesday to teach employees how to make better coffee, who decided that doing it right, or at least better, was more important than 3 hours worth of sales.
Starbucks.
Yes, very good. You might have seen them on the street Tuesday night, desperate caffeine addicts trying to prevent their withdrawal tremors from making them drop their MacBooks. That's because at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, every single Starbucks in the United States closed in order to re-educate baristas in the art of making coffee. They'd never tried it before. CEO Howard Schultz ordered this nationwide Espresso 101 to help his employees remember they aren't just underpaid clerks foisting massively overpriced beverages on an addicted public. No, they are latte artisans foisting massively overpriced beverages on addicts. For example, the baristas were retrained in the art of foaming milk. Here is a quote from the lesson plan. This is real. Quote, the perfect milk requires surfing the tip of the steam wand until the sound is shh. All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
Maybe settling the strike in time for this show wasn't such a good idea after all.
That's USA Today's take on one big show last Sunday night that didn't do so well.
The Oscars.
Right. Ooh. Are you bummed because you missed that glittering awards extravaganza known as the Oscars? Don't be. With only 8 days between the end of the writer's strike and the broadcast, host Jon Stewart didn't have a lot of material to work with. Plus, there were all the feel-good nominees about serial killers, corruption, greed, oil, all that fun stuff. They did all of those montages about the past, but Hollywood doesn't really know much about the past. All they know is the past sounds old. The big winner of the night, the rousing musical No Country for Old Men. It held back a late surge by Juno, the tale of a teenager whose out-of-wedlock pregnancy is really just an opportunity to say cute, snappy things in a droll, offhand way. It's sort of a This American Knocked Up. Carl, how did Steve do in our quiz?
Steve was perfect. 3 correct answers, and he is a prize winner.
Well done.
Yay.
Congratulations, Steve.
Thank you
so much for playing.
It's as if Steve was born into the world knowing current events.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you please give us the scores?
Charlie Pierce has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Paula Poundstone has 2. Roy Blunt Jr. has 1.
All right. Roy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. 50 years of Cuban rule by Fidel Castro officially ended last Sunday when the parliament elected blank in his place.
His brother, Raul.
Right. Investigators say they don't know what caused the blackout that affected as many as 3 million people in blank.
Florida.
Right. After a 17-month exile following a military coup, the former prime minister of blank returned to face charges.
Florida.
No. Thailand. Britain's Ministry of Defense announced that blank has been serving on the front lines in Afghanistan.
Prince Harry.
Right. A 9-year-old tennis player in Tasmania has been banned from playing at her local club because she blanks.
She grunts too hard when
she's stirred. Exactly. A study released by the Pew Center on the States found that one in 100 adults in the U.S. is now incarcerated. Exactly right. A new survey found that more than 40% of Americans will turn away from the blank of their childhood during their lives.
Their religion.
Exactly. A man suspected of stealing clothes from a store in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, was caught when he blanked.
He walked out wearing some of those clothes along with the hanger.
No,
that's true. There was a guy.
That was a story. That may not have been in Sheboygan.
Oh.
In Sheboygan, the guy was caught when he showed up for questioning by the police wearing the jacket he had stolen. It really is. It's a terrible fashion conundrum. What do you wear when being interrogated by police about the jacket they think you stole from Kohl's? Mm-hmm. How about, just crazy idea, that spiffy jacket you stole from Kohl's? That's what Felipe Medina of Sheboygan must have thought. Unfortunately for him, the police instantly recognized the jacket from the surveillance tapes and arrested him.
How many different stupid clothes thieves stories am I expected to learn?
It's not a question.
Four.
More than that, I can't keep track.
He's only got 10 fingers.
Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 13 points, and Roy has the lead.
All right. Paula, you're up next. Please fill in the blank. On Thursday, President Bush said that he doesn't think the country is headed for a blank.
A recession.
Right. A House committee asked the Justice Department to investigate whether blank perjured himself when asked about alleged steroid use.
Roger Clemens.
Right. Before officially endorsing Barack Obama, Senator Chris Dodd made what he said was an awkward call to blank.
Hillary Clinton.
Of course. UN Chief Kofi Annan announced that the rival political factions in blank had agreed to form a coalition government.
Kenya.
Right. Based on telltale marks on the victim's arms, police believe a man in Anchorage, Alaska, was robbed by a thief armed with a blank.
Polar bear.
No. A concealed polar bear. No. A spork. A newly discovered photograph of Peter Schiff, the boy described as blank's one true love, will go on display in Amsterdam.
Blank's one true love?
Yes.
Amsterdam. Van Gogh?
No, Anne Frank. Anne Frank. Oh. Unless Michael Jackson can come up with the money owed to financial title company, blank will go up for auction.
Neverland.
Right, Neverland Ranch. A bicyclist in Poland was shocked when he looked down while riding and discovered blank.
Looked down while riding and discovered, I don't know, he had no clothes on.
That his pants were on fire.
Oh! Oh.
Mishlav Janinski told
police. That's some peddling right
there,
boy.
Yeah. He smelled burning, he said, as he rode down the street. He looked down to see that his pants were in flames.
Ooh. Liar, liar.
Yeah. Police speculate the pants on fire incident could have been caused by friction as he cycled. But whatever the cause, according to a police spokesman, quote, witnesses said he was like a flaming human torch cycling down the road. Ooh. Janinski was rescued, still smoking, by passersby. He is recovering. Ooh. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. Paula now has 12 points, but Roy still has the lead with 13.
All right. Well done. How many, then, does Charlie need to win this thing?
5 correct answers.
All right. Here we go, Charlie. Ready to play? Writing in the New York Times, blank said he would not mount an independent campaign for president.
Michael Bloomberg.
Right. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates urged blank to quickly end its invasion into northern Iraq.
Turkey.
Right. The European Union announced a record $1.3 billion antitrust fine against blank.
Microsoft.
Right. A Japanese man pretending to be blind was found out when he told police that he had been blanked.
Robbed.
No, run over by a red car.
Oh. Okay.
How'd you know he wasn't blind, Encyclopedia Brown? The Academy Awards issued an official apology to blank for not including her in a montage of Oscar hosts.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Right. Georgia congressman and civil rights icon blank announced he was switching his support from Hillary Clinton and endorsing Barack Obama.
John Lewis.
Right. Because of high levels of static electricity in her body, British grandmother Mavis Price is able to blank.
Cure headaches.
No. Blow up appliances just by touching them.
Excellent!
Ooh. Wow. Ooh. That is so Uncle Fester.
Yeah. According to Price, no appliances shaved. She's blown up 15 electric kettles, 20 irons, 10 vacuum cleaners in the past few years. She said, quote, I first noticed it back in the 50s when I plugged in a television set. and ended up blowing up the television and flying across the room. I think the only option might be to wear a diving suit, rubber gloves, and Wellingtons. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Charlie needed 5 correct answers, Peter, and he had 5 correct answers. So with 14 points, Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
Well done, Charlie. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict the next person or thing a presidential candidate will be forced to renounce. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Kauffman, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world on the web at kauffman.org. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support. For the Performing Arts, Environmental Conservation, Medical Research, and the Prevention of Child Abuse, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need on the web, rwjf.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our intern is Joe Feldman. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our technical director is Lorna White. Other engineers include Kurt Stahlnecker, Robert Newhouse, and the crew at Samford University's Wright Center right here in Birmingham, Alabama. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, who will be denounced by what presidential candidate? Paula Poundstone.
Well, in a nod to the young voters that are driving these campaigns, each candidate, in order to be elected, will have to denounce Voldemort.
Charlie Pierce.
Fred Thompson, Rudy Giuliani, and Mitt Romney will gather together to denounce, reject, and condemn anyone who thought it was a good freaking idea in the first place.
Roy Blunt Jr.
There being no one else left for him to be holier than, Ralph Nader will renounce himself.
Well, if any of those candidates denounce any of those people, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Roy Blunt Jr., and Paula Poundstone. Thanks this week to Mike Morgan, Michael Krall, Mary Henley, and everyone at member station WBHM in Birmingham. Thanks to our audience here at Samford University. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.